Hello and welcome to the Buckingham Garden Centre podcast. I'm Ronnie Barber and our expert, as ever, is Chris Day. On the podcast today, we're talking bees, early bloomers and the changing seasons. Chris, we're in a lovely setting here at the Garden Centre, Buckingham Garden Centre, and it's chilly, but it's still quite pleasant, and we're looking at plants here. At this stage, are these plants supposed to be looking like this, flowered up and everything?
Yes, Ronnie, these are hellebores, and normally people see the name hellebore in a gardening magazine or a newspaper, they usually see the name Christmas rose, which is one type. However, now the plant's been hybridised over the years. We're getting all these wonderful varieties, which flower normally sort of February, March onwards. That's their peak time. Because of the incredibly mild December, in fact, obviously now into January, they've been flowering much earlier. So these plants were destined to arrive here sort of in 6 weeks' time, and they've arrived now in the last couple of weeks.
So, if you're planning the garden centre sort of plants that you're going to be putting out for sale, does that mean that everything shuffles up then, Chris?
It does, yeah, because the poor growers here who are producing these plants obviously have to allocate the space for their next crop. And, of course, like we have space allocations for seasonal plants, then so much so that we have to get the plants in a little bit early, which means we can tempt customers that little bit earlier as well. But, of course, if the weather is very poor, if it's very, very cold or very wet, people then are less determined to come out and shop. But the plants are going to look good. They stay at this sort of stage now right through until the spring. So it just means, I suppose, as a garden centre, we've got more opportunity and time to sell them, which is great news.
Are we down to three seasons, do you think?
I think that's what's happening. They're sort of merging. And certainly over the last 2 or 3 years, we've certainly seen sort of the lack of spring. It's been winter and then almost into summer. Certainly a couple of years ago, I mean, we had probably about a week or 10 days of very, very spring-like weather. And then, of course, the temperatures then soared. We're into very high temperatures, which, of course, then brings plants on as well. So we do effectively sort of lose a season, but we sort of drop out and we miss the opportunities that season brings, because people associate seasons with plants. I mean, snowdrops are often associated with the harbingers of spring, a bit like daffodils. They were flowering before Christmas. So how can we get our minds sort of around that? But as gardeners, of course, we want colour at certain times of the year. And that's why I always say to customers to pop into the garden centre, not necessarily by the calendar, but by the opportunity to come in. And if you see something in flower then, buy it, because then you know at that particular time or around about that time of the year it'll be in colour. And that's quite important now. You can't garden literally by the calendar anymore.
At the moment, we're expecting there could be a really cold snap, but they're always portraits of a doom. Will these survive all right?
Yeah, I mean, hellebores have got these very large, sort of fleshy leaves. I mean, the plants themselves sort of sit there, and as soon as the day length starts to increase, and that's the thing, we've had such mild, and obviously getting longer days now, we're now into January, obviously the plants sort of respond, but no, they're tough as old boots. I mean, that's a great fault with hellebores. The hybridisers have worked a lot on colours and on flowers, and obviously the stamens and the size of flower, but really it's about the toughness and resilient as good garden plants. Most people who grow hellebores will say, yeah, they look nice for 3-4 months and then the leaves can look a little bit poorly and sickly. Well, that's unfortunately like all bulbous plants, potentially they're going to die down. Well, hellebores are no different. So you've just to accept that you're going to get some amazing colour, but the payback is that the plants will need to be mollycoddled a little bit during the early spring and summer.
In terms of what people should be doing in the gardens now then, Chris, is it feed time now? Bear in mind, you're talking to a gardening idiot. Is it feed time? What are we doing?
Still a little bit early. Feeds really benefit temperature, the soil temperature. So once we get to soil temperature of around about 16 degrees, a good indication of that is when your dandelions are coming into flower. I always use that as a barometer. So you see your dandelions coming into flower, you know the soil temperatures are around about 16, so low 60s, you can start applying your feeds, which is usually March, middle of March, the end of March. Do it any earlier, of course, you can put the plants in a false sense of security. The last thing you want to be doing in the garden at this time of year is encouraging lots of sappy growth, because we just don't know what's around the corner. We've had a very mild winter, but of course that could change quite dramatically. We could get some really sharp frosts, which of course all that lovely vegetative growth, that soft growth, would be hit and obviously clobbered quite hard. And of course that would mean you'd lose some foliage and maybe lose some flowers as well, which would be a shame.
So we've come down to the beehives here at Buckingham Garden Centre, and Chris, it's become the thing. There's been petitions about looking after our bees and everything. What do you think are the ramifications for gardeners then?
Yes, at the moment there's obviously lots of negativity out there about, first of all, chemicals are being offered to gardeners to use, which may have, and not a lot of it is scientifically proven, that they may be hitting populations. Obviously, different ways of growing plants and obviously the implications of farming and farming practices over the last few years, and we've seen quite a lot of widespread sort of publicity, certainly on BBC Countryfile. They brought it to the attention to a lot of people, which is good. As gardeners, of course, we want to be attracting the right sort of plants to attract bees and butterflies in the whole wildlife mantra, really. And if as gardeners, we're doing so much more than perhaps gardeners actually realise. And that's quite fascinating. You don't want to be planting the sort of double flowers. You want to be buying plants which have got nice, single, large flowers, preferably, pollen-rich, which will obviously then work well within the bee population. And subconsciously, gardeners are actually doing more than we probably actually don't underestimate for the actual bee population in the whole of the UK. And there's been quite a bit of research that certainly around London and the South East, gardeners are having the biggest implication because, of course, they're putting the right sort of plants in to help the populations. And at the garden centre here, we're fortunate. We're surrounded by, obviously, hedgerows and, obviously, where the beehives are situated, we're next to our fruit trees, which in another sort of 2 months' time will be ablazing with lots of blossom and pollen, which, of course, is a great impetus. But our bees, our honeybees, move around the garden centre. You can hear them, literally. They'll go and find stock, and obviously when we get a new lot of plants in there, they're there. And our bee honey is obviously quite unique in that respect.
Yeah.
It's picking out the best of the flavours.
If on a wider scale then, Chris, if we are going to stop using herbicides, insecticides and things, are we going to have to go back to the old ways then of gardening and think about the traditional ways of getting rid of bugs? And or are we just going to have to put up with bugs?
There is an implication there, Ronnie, for sure. And I think that the biggest thing is we're going to have to look certainly at more traditional methods, but methods not necessarily involving chemicals, because of course chemicals come and go. They're very restricted in what you can use them on as well. I mean, if you look at any garden centre or any DIY store, look at the chemical shelves, you'll see that there's chemicals designed for fruit and vegetables and things for ornamentals. So of course you've got fruit and veg are even more pernickety what you can actually apply. Your ornamentals is not such a problem. So yes, I think as gardeners we need to be more savvy of what's available out there, and maybe look at more traditional ways, whether that's organic. Obviously lots of new organic methods are being applied now. I mean, for pest control, for instance, if you've got green fly on your plants, soft horticultural soap, insecticidal soap, is one of the best ways. Not recommend that you use a product you might use for washing your dishes, because of course it doesn't say it on the packaging, so we couldn't even suggest that you do that. But there are insecticidal soaps on the market which are nice and clean, friendly, and of course they'll control. But they work quite cleverly. They work on contact, so as the soap hits the pest actually suffocates. It coats the pest in the soap. It suffocates and dies. So that's what you call a contact. So you'd need to be spraying more often.
Right.
So this is another thing. People want to spray more often. Do they want to do that? Probably not, because a lot of the chemicals are what they call systemic. They go into the plant sap system. We're losing all those, and they're the ones which are potentially problematic in the whole eco-structure of plants.
Do you think then, Chris, that we're getting into an area where as a gardener you come in and there will be plants that are bee friendly then and will be signposted?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, we're seeing that already. The gardening trade is sort of taking that to heart now, and it's good. When you're looking around at plants, you'll see often little bee signs or actual little visuals to indicate that they are pollen rich, or they're just generally wildlife friendly. But as gardeners, we know we can do so much. Planting native plants, getting back to the real basics of what the garden ingredients should be. So putting things like quickthorn, blackthorn, sloes, putting all the naturalistic countryside plants into your garden, albeit in a smaller way, because obviously these plants get big, so you need to sort of prune them and trim them. Then you're going to do probably the best, and you're going to produce the right sort of eco structure for your wildlife to benefit, and also to you to benefit, because you won't need to use as many chemicals, because you'll have an active ingredients of all these wonderful beneficial insects coming into your garden. So remember, insects, although we tend to taint them as all being baddies, there are a lot of goodies as well which we need to get in as well. Things like hoverflies, and they come in on the back of things like if you plant calendulas or lovely, a lot of the bedding plants, a lot of the seasonal plants you put in, they come in as well. So it's getting that balance. So it's not just going for one sort of group plant, it's not going necessarily for trees or shrubs, it's getting that mix, and that's where gardeners can do such a great bit of work quite easily, to be honest with you.
That's all we've got time for today. If you'd like to ask Chris a question about your gardening problems or dilemmas, you can contact us via our Facebook page or go via the website, www.buckinghamgardencentre.co.uk, or you can follow us on Twitter. See you next time.